Blog Talk Radio.
Above and below the ground, cause ants and bugs and nasty grubs above and below the ground. Bugs have no chance if they are advanced above and below the ground.
Bayer Advanced Complete Brand Insect Killer for soil and turf has the two-way formula that kills bugs fast and keeps on working. Control above-ground insects for up to 30 days and below-ground insects for up to 3 months.
Above and below the ground, to fleas and ticks and bugs and grubs above and below the ground. Bugs have no chance if they are advanced above and below the ground.
Bayer Advanced Complete Brand Insect Killer. Get more from the blue bottle. Always read and follow label directions.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Good morning. This is Lisa Zimmer, and welcome to Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I am very, very excited to bring you the topics we're talking about today. Today, we're going to be talking about three important topics to me. Of course, all the topics I have on the show are close to my heart and soul, but these are three that are going to kind of pull out a little bit of a different side of who we are in revealing ourselves to ourselves, because it talks about the real core of sort of our darker sides, the sides we keep to ourselves, sometimes the sides we don't even reveal openly to ourselves. They touch upon three topics. The three topics are addiction, which also in our storyline is going to lead into discussions about NDE, which is near-death experiences, which with my second guest is a great segue because she's got an incredible story about her connection with the afterlife. So although I have many topics close to my heart, these are three really, really core close topics for me. Now, let me digress just a tad. I have been working on finishing up a book. In that process, I have been working recently with a very brilliant and gorgeous, equally creative and just ingenious woman, Lisa Malt, who has been both inspiring and also a great whip, like getting me into shape. So one of her points to me is, you know, Lisa, you got to dig deeper. People want to know you're deep, dark, dirty, okay? You have to not give a shit what people think. Lisa, you got to go there. Well, you know, I've got two books going on. One's an instructional book, kind of like, you know, how to increase your intuitive awareness, tapping in, downloading, all of that. Then the other one is that deep, dark, dirty, raw, okay? But I wasn't going to combine the two. So I'm throwing them both at her now. She's got her work cut out for her. God bless you, Lisa. You are loved more than you know. And here we are at this place of revealing the dark and the dirty. And our first guest today is revealing his dark and dirty. Now, I relate to this guy so much in reading his book. We're going to talk to Alan Charles. He wrote Walking Out the Other Side. And in reading Alan's book, he talks about his drug addiction. Now, how I got into my line of work, which is intuitive work, counseling on a level of inspiring and motivating people, also having the ability to pick up on collective consciousness and have actual information come through that is valid for others. So this was not something I looked for. This is something that found me, and it found me through the series of events and choices that I chose that were not to the best choices of my decision-making in my lifetime. But, you know, I value the choices because it taught me tons. Over 30 years ago, I was a drug addict. My drug of choice, not that I found it, it found me because it was kind of a love-hate with this drug, but it was cocaine. I had three near-death experiences, came back to talk and tell about it, but I didn't for quite a while. My intuition soared off the charts. I had to do something with it or ignore it. Hence, here I am. So when I hear about somebody who has turned their life around, who has overcome drug addiction, who is looking to create a positive influence in young people's lives or others' lives by exploring that intensity of what is drug addiction, what is addiction? You know, we all have an addiction, even if it is, you know, our Oreo bag in a movie that we don't want to tell anybody we're watching. You know, there's addictions everywhere, and very few people in the world, I couldn't tell you one off the top of my head who doesn't have some sort of addiction, and not all of them are bad addictions, but they can lead to bad addictions. Drugs, yes, notoriously, bad addictions. But the experiences that are gained from these bad addictions can be life lessons that change lives for immeasurable good. And I've seen incredible life stories change and people who are doing such good in the world that, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years ago, people had given up on. So you can turn your life around with the intent to want to do good for your soul, to want to be of service for yourself. By doing good for someone else, it does restore the soul. And there is that life force, give and take, that comes with that. So without further ado, I want to introduce our first guest today, who wrote an incredible book, very, very vulnerable, very revealing, very heartfelt, very in the core. It's very raw. And he's not calling in. Okay, so I may have to call Mr. Alan James, Alan Charles. He is not on my screen here, folks. So here I am babbling away on my drug addiction, my ins and outs. And so, okay, I think Lisa might have had something to do with this. Lisa, did you have something to do with this? You want me to just babble away, don't you? You just want me to talk about my own drug addiction here. Well, it was over 30 years ago, so it's pretty easy for me to talk about it. I've spent many, many years processing it, looking at it, analyzing it, turning it upside down, shaking it down. And I'm, you know, I'm pretty glad I'm here on the other end. So it's not something I'm ashamed of. But here, we're calling Mr. Alan Charles live. Here we go. Well, folks, you may have to listen to me ramble on until my second guest gets here, but I'm going to continue to try Mr. Alan Charles here. Alan Charles, he did write a really, really good book. He really did. It was a revealing book. It's a very revealing book. It's one of those that comes from a place of, you know, it's a core. It's a raw core when you go through something that you really have to evolve through shame, because nobody really wants to raise a flag and say, hey, guess what I did? I was a drug addict, and it was a really highlighted part of my life. Okay, nobody really wants to go there, because it's that part where, you know, judgment comes in. People love to, you know, go into that place of judgment. Well, thank God that wasn't me, you know. I'm not going to talk about how many shots of alcohol I do a day, but thank God I didn't do drugs. So there's a whole lot of justification that also goes on with addiction. Because what is addiction? Addiction is escape. Addiction is wanting to move away from how you're feeling right now in the present moment. And believe me, what one of us has not, at some point in our life, wanted to move away from an emotion or a feeling that we were presently feeling? I know, you know, I could say there's sometimes weeks that I could say every day there's a moment that comes in that I say, whoop, don't want to feel this right now, but you do. And that's called life, and you learn to manage through those emotions and feelings, and you learn how those emotions and feelings don't control you, but you learn to look at them in a way that you have control over them. And what addiction is that overwhelming feeling that you're not in control of what's going on in your life. And so what addiction plays out as is many different acts of escapism. And so there's a lot of innocent addictions. You know, there's like seemingly innocent addictions until they become, you know, divorce issues like compulsive shopping or shopping that becomes compulsive shopping or a little weekend gambling that becomes compulsive gambling or, you know, a little after the day drink that becomes a drink all day. You know, there's a lot of times where we push or some can push the envelope as far as escapism goes. And in those periods of time, we actually have a lot of our fears coming to the surface, and that's what we're trying to repress. So addiction is just one of them, and alcohol's another really acceptable one in society today. And there's also a whole slew of other points that we can really look at in addiction. But, you know, where we are in recovery, okay? So addiction is this dirty little word. People don't want to look at it. People want to pretend it doesn't exist, and they want to walk away from it. But then we have recovery centers popping up everywhere. So obviously addiction is rampant. And we have a society that plays on our consciousness of we have to have more, or your life isn't as exciting as it should be, or you need. And so we're never really at that place of satisfaction, of wholeness, of really feeling content within ourselves, or really appreciating or loving ourselves, or really, you know, thinking, hey, you know, this is good enough. There's always that constant nagging. And when addiction takes a hold of a person and a personality, it robs them of the simplicity of those natural, beautiful blessings that came into your life in the first place as your calling, your career calling, your drives and passions. Now let's talk about how it affects families and your children and your friendships. These are the things that when they start to be ripped away from your life because of your addiction, hopefully, but unfortunately, it's the piece of where it gets your attention. Because when your addiction affects others in your life, that's not okay. Because you've now allowed your addiction to affect other people's quality of life. And you've chosen not to take responsibility for your choices and your decisions. And as you start to become more aware of how your addiction has robbed you of people you love from your life, or lost you your job, or your home, or the things that have provided security for you, maybe and just maybe then, you might wake up and say, okay, well, this hasn't worked. I need to do something. And it takes a really strong resolve, a really strong willpower for that person to get there. A lot of times they're really blessed with some great people around them that help nudge them in that direction. But you're not alone, all right? There's not one of us out there who hasn't experienced the same feeling that you've experienced. The problem is that we as a society don't give a whole lot of respect to addicts. We pretty much shun them. We discriminate. We label them. We push them in a corner. And we look at them as if they're kind of the grudge of the universe. You would be surprised how many people in this world walk around in corporate America who once were junkies, shooting needles in their arms and between their toes. Life happens. And you know what? It isn't pretty. And behind closed doors, you don't know what's really going on. So, you know, by the grace of God go I, you need to realize that addiction isn't your fault. It's an escape. It's an illness. It is something that you have chosen to cope, and that's life, unfortunately. it's unfortunate that the experiences that you're going through are torturing. However, you can change this and turn it around. And addiction is one of those things that when you make the choice within yourself, you don't want to be an addict, life changes. Life changes quick. And I'm not just talking, you know, blowing smoke up your shorts here. This is from my life. I went through addiction. I went through looking for cocaine on the rug, okay? I come from a family where, you know, this is unthought of. Unfathomable. I wanted and needed for nothing in my life, and yet found myself with other junkies looking for cocaine on the rug, okay? Granted, 30 years plus ago, but this was my reality. And it's not a pretty reality. It's not something I want to wave a flag and say, look how wonderful I am, because it was not a wonderful time in my life. And yet at the same point, I want to make the point that you can turn your life around. You know, I have four kids, and that experience made me a better parent. Not a perfect parent by any means, because I don't believe in perfection, but I'm a pretty damn good parent. My kids love me. We have a great relationship. They talk to me openly. They're on a great track individually. I'm a proud mom. And I believe that experience, having lived through it, having gotten through it, being able to look at it from the other side and saying, thank you, God, I'm through that jonesing feeling, and let me help others, is a real rewarding state. I mean, a drug addiction gets a hold of your senses. It gets a hold of your psyche. It gets a hold of your spirit. I remember going through this. I woke up one morning. I said, cold turkey, that's it. I'm never doing it again. And I didn't. And I stopped. But I would not say that, you know, that was my experience. And it was a life-changing, pivotal spiritual experience for me, which helped me go through that in a direct, cold turkey kind of way. But don't think I didn't have withdrawals. And don't think that I didn't have hell on earth to cope with through it, because it would be a simple act of taking a shower and opening up the shampoo bottle and washing my hair, and all of a sudden the smell of cocaine would drift through my senses and drip in my throat, and I would all of a sudden start shaking in the shower and trembling and feeling the sensations of what high that felt like with that cocaine, and having to talk myself back down, cold sweats in the shower of reliving my cocaine experience. That went on for about, I would say, a good year. I went through some withdrawals. It got less. You know, in the beginning, it was pretty much every day, and then it got less. But it was an experience that allowed me to process, be aware, and I was already living on my own at 18, and I was working for myself as well as for a company, and I had to grow up pretty quickly, and I did. Because I knew what the results of me giving into the addiction were, and I knew what the results of me getting over the addiction were. And there was no other choice. It was either give in to the drug and that feeling of a few minutes of euphoria and then a lot of hell withdrawal, or kick it clean and move on. And that's what I did. No, I am no greater than anyone else who has kicked addiction. I'm just telling you my personal story. And my personal story was hellish. Cocaine was a drug that I hated until I took it and I loved it. And it gets a hold of your psyche and your soul, and it makes you feel invincible. And then when it wears off, it brings you to your knees, literally, figuratively, emotionally, and spiritually. There's no other experience that I've ever experienced, including LSD, that has that much of a hold of a drug on your soul. And for me, it was one of those experiences that I'm grateful I lived through, but I'm glad that I got through. And I'm on that experience, so far so good. God bless me on this one. I've been open about my experiences with my children, and I've been able to avoid that horror with them. So far so good. My youngest is 17, and, you know, there's something to revealing your truths, okay? When you're honest with yourself, you're honest with others, things change. Life changes. But if you can't take responsibility for when you did fuck up, and we all do, and we all have, how's it ever going to get any better? So you can't beat yourself up over something that you've done. You can take it, you can look at it, and you can say, thank God I'm here today because I'm better than I was then. And you move on from there. And it's baby steps, and it's little steps. And if you step two steps forward and one step backwards, you're still one step ahead. So don't beat yourself up so much. You know, addiction's one of those things that our country is, I don't want to get on a tirade, but we promote addiction through so many outlets. Our media outlets promote addiction. Addiction of sex, addiction of want, addiction of lust, addiction of high, addiction of alcohol, addiction of youth. We're addicted country. And we have to get back to the roots of, why are we trying to be something that we're not? Why are we seeking out something that we're not? Why aren't we happy with what we've got? That's what we got to get back to, the root of what we have to get back to. Now, I know I've been babbling on here for 30 minutes. I'm going to check the clock and see how much longer I have to babble with you guys until Dr. Jamie Turndorf, Dr. Love, is going to join us. Not much longer, about 5 minutes. But I want to open up the lines. I've got a lot of people here who are looking at my studio here, but I want you guys to know that it's okay. You're sending me messages here. I get them. I'm seeing them. I'll respond after the show. I appreciate your support. And there's a whole lot of us out here that I think, you know, I'm one of the baby boomers. I'm at the tail end of the baby boomers, but I'm a baby boomer. And we're at this place in life right now, the baby boomers, that they're experiencing a whole lot of effects from a lifestyle of abuse. And so we're seeing a lot of people who are coming out with heart disease. We're seeing a lot of people who are coming out with, you know, diabetes and diseases in their 40s and their 50s that really we didn't see until 70s and 80s. And we're looking at this at, you know, have we done something to our bodies with all this indulgence that 20, 30, 40 years later is starting to take a toll on the physical form? So there's so many reasons. When I'm talking as someone who is middle-aged, and if anyone's out there listening who is younger and youthful in this millennial age generation where it all feels good, and you guys are all very much tapped into staying current, realize that staying current in the flow of drugs is only going to bring you a whole lot of feeling like you're never going to evolve beyond the drug. It's going to keep you stuck in that feeling of drug. I'm seeing too many people stuck to their televisions on these gaming devices. You know, whether they're stoned or they're drugged out, there's no motivation. Okay, so there's a whole lot of complacency that is in our youth that also has come from the baby boomers down. And it's that whole do what you feel is good kind of mentality that really isn't conducive to advancing in your life. You have to have a plan. Find your passion. I tell everybody, go back to before you were 10 years old. What'd you love to do before you were 10 years old? Recreate that in the adult state. There's a passion there. There's something there that's going to give you some sense of drive, love, excitement for life again. You have to find your drive and your passion. And addiction, find help, find your support. We're going to move into talking a little bit about my second guest, who, God bless us, shall be calling in momentarily. Our second guest, this was a great segue, shall we say, because I read the first book, Walking Out the Other Side. And that was Alan Charles, who did not call. Alan, we'll have a talk. Secondly, we have our second book guest, Dr. Jamie Turndorf. Now, this was a completely different vibe, okay? Her book is all about love. In fact, Dr. Jamie Turndorf has named her book Love Never Dies. It is a beautiful purple book with a heart. You know how when you put your fingers together, your thumbs together, and the fingers from your other hand, you make the shape of a heart? So she's got the light shining through the heart. It's beautiful on the front cover. And she has How to Reconnect and Make Peace with the Deceased. Now, she is host of radio's Ask Dr. Love and founder of AskDrLove.com. She's known as Dr. Love. She's actually, this woman's like a phenomenal, insightful guest to have on. We're going to have a great chat here. But let me introduce you a little bit before she calls in to my next guest. Dr. Jamie Turndorf has written a book that comes from her heart about her own personal experience. Now, as you know, I like personal experience books. As we had the first one, Alan went through his addiction with cocaine. Here we talk to Jamie. And Jamie's story is one that's filled with such emotion that you get through a certain chapter and you feel the essence of spirit with you, and you feel like you need to kind of take a break and put the book down. You think about it as you're washing the dishes or you're putting something away, and then you come back to the book and you feel like you're in Jamie's living room. So Jamie's known to millions as Dr. Love. Through her immensely popular website, AskDrLove.com, she's the web's first relationship advice site online since 1995. She's also been delighting her readers and her audiences for over three decades with her engaging blend of professional knowledge, spicy humor, and ability to turn clinical psychobabble into easy-to-understand concepts that transform lives and heal relationships. She's recently brought this expertise to another level, pioneering a new grief therapy method and assisting clients with after-death communications. Jamie's conflict resolution techniques have been featured on all of the major networks, including CNN, who recently dubbed her their resonant love doctor. NBC, CBS, VH1, and Fox, as well as WebMD, Discovery.com, and iVillage, have all touted her one of their best informative love doctors. She's also appeared in many of the most popular national magazines as Cosmopolitan, Men's Health, Glamour, and in addition, she writes a column called We Can Work It Out for Psychology Today Online. The Ask Dr. Love radio show can be heard in Seattle on KKNW and on webtalkradio.net, which is heard in 80 countries worldwide. Dr. Love, Jamie Turndorf, wrote a story that's really, it's one of those love stories that we can all relate to, all want to have in our life, as well as fear the day when that love transcends in a passing. So, to make it simple, Dr. Love lost her love in Italy. And it was a sudden loss. And their relationship was one that was really one of these relationships that came together where they both came into the relationship with a knowing of how they were teaching one another. They knew the benefits of what each was the strength for the other person. Their communication seemed to be one that spoke both on a conscious and an unconscious level. It came from a place of deep knowing. You can tell by how she writes about her relationship that this was a very soul relationship. This was a relationship where they could finish each other's sentences and it didn't tick them off. There was a bond that preceded their meeting, that they had one of those soul connections, karmic connections, if you will. So Dr. Jamie Turndorf met her husband, fell in love, and he was actually married at the time and left his marriage and began a relationship with Jamie. Their love evolved into enormous highs. They followed each other's dreams and paths, supported each other. They grew together. And when Jamie comes on, we're going to talk to her about how this relationship evolved even in his sudden death. All right. It looks like I may have to call Jamie. You know, you'd think that Mercury was in retrograde, truly. It's really only a solar eclipse that we had the other day. But I'll tell you, communication with others lately has been quite interesting. And this is a first for a very long time. I have not had this experience in a while where I've done a live show. And I've been left to my own babbling on here. So I'm very sorry if I'm boring you, but I really want to bring this guest to you. And I'm going to do my darndest to create, get a hold of her. Here we go. All right, this ought to be interesting. If I have to call her on the air, all right, here we go. We're going to call her right now. All right, folks, who's ever just, like, been hanging in there with me, God bless you. Here we go. All right, we're not going to call Alan Charles. He had my second time. I'm amazing, isn't it? Okay, here we go. Dr. Jamie 3450.
Hello, you've reached the office of Dr. Jamie Turndorf. Leave a message and I will return your call as soon as I am able. To send a fax, dial 845-677-1213.
Record your message at the tone. After leaving your message, you may hang up or press pound.
Hello.
Hi, this is Dr. Turndorf.
Hello, Jamie. Dr. Jamie Turndorf. Did I tell you, audience, I would find her, I would get her. Welcome, welcome to Unlimited Realities. We're having a little bit
goodness.
Of a switchboard operation here, so no worries.
Oh,
no
my
worries.
Goodness, I was having trouble getting through.
I think there is problems on the switchboard. I had a problem with my first guest as well, so no worries, Dr. Jamie Turndorf.
Oh,
not
I know
a
how stressful that
all.
Is when you're on air, and oh, my goodness.
Oh, God bless you. I had to babble for 30 minutes prior to you because my first guest wasn't able to get through.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
It's all good. It's all good. I am so loving to have you on live and in person right now because your book's fabulous. Okay, audience, let me reintroduce you. Okay, this is Dr. Jamie Turndorf, also known as Dr. Love. Now, Jamie, I did give them a whole rundown on who you are and what wonders you do on the media networks. So without further ado, I really want to just jump right into your incredible story. I mean, this is like one of those stories that everybody wants to know and is afraid to ask. So
this sounds like sex. Are we talking about sex?
Well, you know, it's like
everything you always wanted to know about sex, but we're afraid to ask. Well, this is everything you always wanted to know about the afterlife, but we're afraid to ask.
Yes. And your connection with Gene is incredible. I mean, this is just, you can feel it, my goosebumps. I mean, I get rushes in reading your paragraphs and the love coming through. So let me just bring everything up to speed. You and your beloved, so intensely, karmically, spiritually connected that when he suddenly passed on a trip to Italy, he never left you. Is that right?
No. Absolutely right on. From the moment he left his body. And, you know, the thing is, I probably should backtrack for your listeners just to give them a little background on our love story leading up to that moment. Would you like me to do that?
Yes, of course. Thank you.
All right. I mean, I guess we only have, I don't want to overstay my welcome. We're together for only a half hour, right?
Yes,
today?
We're live till 12:30, but you...
All right, so I better talk fast. I'll talk fast. So when I was a young girl, Lisa, I had a premonition of the guy I was going to marry. This is your reference to the karmic connection. I saw this man's face. I saw his body. I saw him completely fleshed out. And so I decided I'm going to wait until he appears. I'm not going to date. I'm going to wait. And he actually appeared on the first day of my freshman year at Vassar College. I'd been shut out of all intro sociology classes, and I really wanted to take sociology. So I asked the department chair, Secretary Judy Cadwallader, what can I do? She says, go ask the department chair, Jean Pain, if he can find a seat for you in one of the closed classes. Well, the minute I stepped into that man's office, I had the first and only out-of-body experience of my life. I literally felt my soul shoot at high speed through a tunnel to the end of my life. And when I shot back into my body, I received the message, remember every aspect of this meeting, he's going to be everything to you one day. And then I forgot all about it. I went about my life as a college student, and the interesting thing everybody needs to know is, I found this out right after I met him, that for most of his life, Jean had been one of the most famous Jesuit priests in history. He had taught at the Vatican, and he founded a movement called Liberation Theology, designed to fight church oppression from within. And Jean actually launched to international fame when he publicly opposed the Pope and the Catholic Church's attempts to block the legalization of divorce in Italy. And he got the divorce bill passed. He fought on the grounds of liberation theology, got the divorce bill passed based on the idea that the church should butt out of the private sector. He changed the course of Italian history. And soon after, the Pope granted him the dispensation of his vows so he wasn't excommunicated. He left the Jesuit order and the priesthood, and he was recruited by Vassar College to be the chair of the Department of Sociology. And he had been there 10 years leading up to the day that I met him. Now, everybody also needs to know, I was raised in a completely different way. My parents were two devoutly atheists. Jewish parents, they taught me not to believe in God or the afterlife, and the only religion they practiced was religiously hating each other's guts. So, completely different background, right? Now, 4 years after our fated meeting, it was my senior year, I needed help with the statistical portion of my thesis, and I had heard, among other things, that Jean had been a famous statistician, having founded the Vatican's first and only social research center. So even though he wasn't my advisor, I asked him if he would help me with the statistics.
He did, and within a couple of weeks, we knew we were absolutely crazy for each other. We were twins separated at birth, and there we were, inseparable for 27 years. Until we go to Italy. Now, in the last year of Jean's physical life, we both started having a premonition he was going to die of an accident. We just didn't know when or where it was going to happen. So we go to Italy, and one day while we're sitting on the beach, Jean's hand was up over his head as if to block the rays of the sun. And the next thing I know, a bee swoops down and stings his left hand at the exact location of Christ's stigmata. And now, Lisa, I watch my beloved suffocate to death in front of my eyes.
I know.
And so in part one of Love Never Dies, I describe my experience as best I can. I mean, it was so hellish to have him ripped from me in this way. I go back to the hotel room, and I'm lying on the bed, and I'm shaking, and I'm trembling, and I'm crying. And the next thing I know, I feel that man's hand stroke the entire length of my spine. I know what I felt. I sit bolt upright. I look over my shoulder. I don't see anything, but I know that he's there. And he has been with me ever since. And his astonishing manifestations to this day, often in front of witnesses, have proven to me we don't die. And therefore, our relationships are not meant to end in death. And so I've created what I call my groundbreaking new transdimensional grief therapy method, which totally diverges from the Western approach, which is grieve, let go, and move on. And you better do it in 6 months or we're going to give you a psychiatric label and put drugs down your throat. Instead, my method shows you how to say hello, not goodbye, without a medium, a channeler, or a psychic. And then there's just one more thing, because as a shrink, I know millions of people worldwide harbor unfinished business with those in spirit. And again, Western grief therapy offers us no way of working it out. So my method not only shows you how to reconnect, but also how to make peace with the deceased.
Oh, that is incredible. That is an incredible story. And
I know.
I mean, honestly, and do you feel when he speaks to you, like, let's talk about how, what senses are heightened, what awarenesses are heightened when you're connecting with him or when he's communicating with you? Because I think when we have those little connections with our beloved after they've transcended, there's this place of doubt. Our intuitive side kicks in, and they say, "Oh yes, we're so feeling that connection." And immediately our analytical kicks in and says, "Oh yeah, right."
Yes.
So what?
Yes, yes.
You know, hearing it from someone who is an expert in the field of psychology and insight and awareness, give us some of what you experience, just as a person.
Oh, that's perfect. I'll give you, since we have very little time, I'll just give you a few examples, okay?
Okay.
This is from, because Love Never Dies is broken into three parts. Part one is my story with Jean and my gradual and ongoing discovery of his presence. Part two is how to overcome all the false beliefs and false religious teachings that block everyone from reconnecting. And part three is I show you how to reconnect and how to dialogue. So I'll give you a few, and then when you read the book, you'll get a better sense of all the ways that Jean makes his presence known, which then shows you how your loved ones do too. So when I came back from Italy, my first night back, I was lying in the bed, and I wasn't sleeping, and I'm hearing Jean quote something to me, and I'll come back to that in a minute because it's really important. But the next morning, I come downstairs, and I hear him saying to me, this is thought induction or mind melding. He says, open the back door. I want to show you something. So I open the door, Lisa, and what I see sitting right where my feet are on the step is a little tiny chipmunk. And I could see this chipmunk is not behaving normally. He's in a trance. He's frozen. He's not moving. He's not startled by me. And the next thing I know, he begins to mimic my husband's bodily departure. He starts ripping at his little face with his little hand, mimicking the way Jean was ripping at the oxygen mask because the air wasn't getting in.
And the more he's doing this, I'm seeing my husband is speaking to me through this, what I've since come to call open vessel. Open vessels are humans who are open and animals who are naturally open to communicate messages from spirit. So he's showing me his bodily departure, and the animal is choking like this for 20 minutes, and tears are pouring down my face, and the next thing I know, I see that little creature visibly cough up a wonk of mucus, and he's in peace. And I knew my husband was telling me, I'm okay. Now, one of the next things that happened was I had to fax his death certificate to Verizon, and I had sent many multi-page faxes throughout the day to all over the place, no problem. When I went to fax his death certificate, the cover letter faxes without a hitch, but the death certificate will not fax. I tried 20 times. I try with the obit. Cover letter faxes, the obit won't fax. So the next day, I take the documents to my lawyer's office. I don't say why. I just say, could you fax these to Verizon? I'm waiting and waiting. After 20 minutes, all the secretaries come from out back, and they're all weeping. They said, Jamie, we tried 20 times. The cover letter faxes, but the death certificate and the obit will not fax. He's trying to tell you he's not gone.
So, right. That is so a great
home.
Story. I mean,
I know, right? So I come home, and I try again, and again he hangs it up. So I say, I think you're doing this because I keep forgetting you're still here with me. If I promise to try to remember, will you let this freaking fax go through in its entirety? So I cancel the fax. I feel this tidal wave of love pouring into me, and the fax goes through in its entirety. So,
wow.
I'm starting to realize by this point something pretty wild is happening. Strangers are walking up to me and saying, your husband says, tell our story. And then they walk on. They don't even know me. And I'll just give one more example. And this one involves what I call earthly props. Spirits, being pure energy, are able to communicate using electronic devices as earthly props. So this involves the phone. It was in the early days of my bereavement, and I was crying a lot. It was a hobby, you know. I cried as a hobby. And I'm lying on the floor in my closet weeping, thinking I've got to speak to my friend Ann. No, don't bother her. It's the middle of her work day. Oh, I've got to talk to her. After 20 minutes of this, I hear in the distance the phone ringing. I drag myself up out of the closet. I go get the phone. It's Ann. She says, Jamie, did you call? I said, no, Ann, I was just thinking I needed to talk to you. She said, well, my phone rang and your name and number appeared on the caller ID.
Oh, wow.
I was so amazed that he manipulated the technology to do this. Now, a year later, I have a cough. I cannot breathe. And I say to him, listen, I need to know you're with me right now. Do that caller ID phone trick. Do it right now with my housekeeper, Donna. 2 seconds later, Donna calls. She says, Jamie, did you call? I said, I asked Sean to call. She said, my phone rang and your name and number appeared on the caller ID.
No kidding. Oh,
I know.
Goodness.
I know.
And,
so
and
around
those,
this time, he just did it.
Go ahead.
So I go to my writer's group and I tell Gabe Davis, also a devout Jewish atheist, all about Jean's manifestations, and I tell him about all these caller ID phone tricks, and Gabe says, Jamie, I would like to see whether your phone shows a record of having been manipulated to dial out, even though you didn't use it. So I forget about the challenge. A month later, I'm driving behind Gabe and his wife to meet them for dinner, and I'll never forget, Lisa, it's 4:58, and I suddenly feel this tidal wave of love. I look at the clock, and I know it's 4:58. I get to the restaurant. Gabe stampedes me. He says, Jamie, you won't believe what happened. What happened? He said, at 4:58, my cell phone rang. I looked at the caller ID. Your name and number appeared. I picked the call up, and a man's voice said, is Jamie there? Is Jamie there?
Oh, I've got goodness. Oh my
he
gosh.
Said that the voice had an accent and prolonged the word there. And that's what Jean did, and it sounded like there. He said, Jamie, it wasn't a real call. The voice just faded away, never clicked off. He said, go get your phone, see if it dialed me. So I dig in the bottom of my purse. I hadn't used it all day. Sure enough, my phone dialed Gabe. So look, the point of all these over-the-top manifestations that I describe in part one of Love Never Dies. The point is simple. Jean said to me right after he left his body, Jamie, let our love shine like a torch that lights the path for others. So the point is, these over-the-top manifestations are for you and for everybody listening to let you know your loved ones are here with you too. They're just waiting for you to open the door of your heart and let them back in.
And there's also that validation people need to hear through your experience that this is real, you know, because so many people do experience, you know, signs, signals, you know, voices, and it's one of those things where they rationalize it away. And
absolutely,
I'm so glad you wrote this book. This is, and your connection exercises, like you were saying, it is divided in three parts, this book. And the story part, of course, gets you weeping. And then you move into, okay, so how do I deepen? And then the understanding. And there's this whole piece of you're moving through a process of removing the veils that have clouded your beliefs that this is impossible. And
absolutely. You've explained it so perfectly. It's wonderful to be interviewed by you because you get it. Thank you.
No, this was, the afterlife is one of my absolute favorite topics of all times. I mean, it's literally something that I've been reading since I could read. So it's something that, you know, I don't take lightly. And I have, you know, glimpsed the other side through near-death experiences that I talked about in the first half of my rambling half hour of 30 past years of a drug addiction. So it was like, this has been an incredibly cathartic radio show today, taking me through 30 years of going from there to here with you, because your experience with someone who, first of all, he was prayed for by the Dalai Lama when he passed. So this is somebody who was renowned in his essence, in his connection to source, to God.
Yeah.
You know, this is not just, you know, a flippant connection. This is a man who devoted his life and his soul to, you know, revealing the essence of God. And here he is doing it in his death to you.
I know. And this has become my new calling, because so after I tell everybody our story, which awakens you to all the possibilities that are awaiting you in spirit, now we move into how can John and I help you overcome the obstacles that are standing in your way. So we have to get rid of all the false beliefs and all the misconceptions. And so maybe because we don't have much time, may I just give one? And then, of course, when everyone reads Love Never Dies, you'll be able to, you know, eliminate all the rest of them. May I give one?
Yes. Of course. Go for it. Yes.
Okay. So here's just one. This one is that we're not supposed to reconnect with those in spirit. We're not even supposed to. Now, how did I find out that this is not true? Remember I said my first night back, Jean was quoting something to me. I didn't know what it was. Well, I went to his priest the following morning to prepare the readings for Jean's funeral, and I'm meeting the guy for the first time because I never went to church, right? And I never discussed religion with Jean. So I tell the priest, last night Jean was quoting something. And the priest raises his brow like, yo, this babe has lost her marbles, right? But then when I tell him what Jean said, the priest goes white, crosses himself, and he says, dear God, Jamie, at first I did not believe that Jean is speaking to you, but I do now. And he says, you are quoting an obscure biblical passage from the communion of saints. Like, I would know? I didn't know. And it took me a year to understand why Jean chose to quote that and only that passage. Remember, he was a religious pioneer in life, and he continues to be in the afterlife. What I found out is that the communion of saints says that our loved ones in spirit are one with or in communion with God and the saints. And since the Bible is telling us that we're supposed to stay in communion and communication with God and the saints, it means the Bible is telling us we're supposed to stay in communion and communication with our loved ones in spirit because they're one with God and the saints.
Ah.
So John's saying to us, what we've been told about the afterlife is dead wrong. As he said to me right after he left his body, Jamie, death is an illusion. There's a very thin veil between the realm where you are and the realm where I am. The veil is thinner than you can ever imagine. I'm standing right here. In other
wow.
words, we're not supposed to live in an emotional wasteland separated from those we love, waiting until we quote-unquote die to enter heaven, because heaven is all around us. Heaven is here and now. We're supposed to reconnect and stay connected now. So that's just one of the misconceptions and the ways that I show you to reformulate your understanding of the afterlife and that we don't die. So, I mean, there's so many others that I want everybody to, you know, to eliminate, like, oh, we can't move on or they can't move on. All these misconceptions, they don't go anywhere. And essentially, what I talk about in part two of part two of Love Never Dies is the latest science, you know, the quantum physicists who now understand that 95% of our universe is dark matter, that it doesn't reflect light. But it's here. And so it fits with what Jean said when he said, I'm standing right here, Jamie. Our loved ones in spirit are in the dark matter. They're literally right here. They don't go anywhere. They don't
yep.
move on to anywhere. So essentially, to demystify this, we're talking about energy. And as Einstein said, energy cannot be destroyed. So when our loved ones shed the turtle shell of their bodies, they just move into the dark matter, and there they are, waiting to reconnect with us and energetically communicate. And I explain how basically we're talking about sending and receiving energetic signals. And human beings are wired to do this. We do it all the time. We park at a light. We look over at a driver in the neighboring car. That driver always
right.
looks back at us because he senses the energetic frequency of our gaze. So when we send and receive energetic signals with those in spirit, that's what we're doing. So in part three of Love Never Dies, I show you how to tune to what I call the spirit channel in your brain and perfect your ability to send and receive energetic signals. And the way we do it, I mean, there's a way that Jean showed me to do it that I teach you in part three. You have to become more receptive to spirit, and I have, you know, specific exercises that I show you how to tune to the spirit channel, be more receptive by sitting in nature, opening your five senses, because, again, spirits are pure energy. So they are able to send signs to all of our senses. So then that's the next step, recognizing the signs. For most people, just becoming aware of the signs helps them begin the reconnection, right? And
right.
many people don't even realize the signs they're getting. Now,
that's
here's
right.
where... Right? And now here's where Love Never Dies takes after-death communication to a whole other plane. The CEO of Hay House said to me, Jamie, we've never seen anything like what you do next. What I do next is I show you how to bring the signs to life and engage in a back-and-forth dialogue with those in spirit so that you can use the human and animal open vessels, you can use the earthly props, the electronics, in order to facilitate a back-and-forth discussion. And then I also show you how to have a direct dialogue with anyone in spirit in writing and how to record it. And there's a direct dialogue. And we use the direct dialogue for anything that you may need to say goodbye to the physical body if someone was ripped from you, to obtain guidance because those in spirit are our guides now and they can help us to fulfill our spiritual growth and our full destinies. And then last but not least, we can dialogue in order to heal our unfinished business. And I show you how to do this. I've got a lot of case examples of people talking back and forth with my dialoguing with the departed technique until they work out their unfinished business.
Oh, this is wonderful. This is such a healing. Jamie, this
yes,
is like
it is.
This is going to open the doors to people who spend so many years in
I know.
Loneliness, you know, after
I
their
know.
Loved ones are gone. Now, audience, I want to promote Jamie's book again, so you can go to Amazon.com and get her book. It's Dr. Jamie Turndorf, also known as Dr. Love. She's host of radio's Ask Dr. Love and founder of AskDrLove.com. Her book, Love Never Dies, How to Reconnect and Make Peace with the Deceased. You will love this book. It's a beautiful book, and it's beautiful inside and out. You're going to be drawn to the cover. I love the cover, Jamie.
You're wonderful.
You,
I have a gift. Would you like a gift?
I have a gift. You gave me a signed copy.
Oh, I was going to give you another gift. You want another gift?
Of course, I will take another gift. God bless you.
All right. So, well, I actually have two gifts for because Love Never Dies became an overnight bestseller when I did the Coast to Coast show and it sold out on Amazon. I started giving this gift so because people couldn't wait to get the book, you know, and get started on their
right.
own reconnection. So sign up for my free newsletter at AskDrLove.com and you'll receive the preface and the intro. So that gets you started while you're waiting for the book to arrive. Then
wonderful. Okay,
and then
everybody,
I have another gift. I'm always over delivering. So here's another gift. The after you buy the paperback, write to my webmaster at AskDrLove.com. You'll see it on my homepage, and you'll receive a private, exclusive video where Jean made his first manifestation during a public talk, and it's captured on film.
Oh, that is wonderful. I will look at that. Jamie, it has been so delightful talking to you today. You are such a wonderful guest, and I love your story. I love your work. And please, if there's any time you'd like to come and chat with me again, let me know. I would love to talk to you. And
oh, you are great.
You're awesome. You're wonderful. And audience,
you are.
Well, Dr. Jamie Turndorf, Ask Dr. Love. Love never dies. Audience, I suggest, please. You know, life's short. We need to be prepared. And God bless people who bring their awareness, their insight, and their experience to us like Dr. Jamie Turndorf. Thank you, Jamie. God bless you. Thank you, audience, for tuning in and listening. God bless all of you out there. Until we talk next week, have a beautiful and blessed week. Thank you again, Jamie. Have a great week.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Love to everyone.
Bye-bye.
Adding the choice of a crispy chicken BLT to Wendy's 4-for-4 is the biggest thing since rappers trying to sing.
I got me a yacht and I sound like a robot.
But do you like the sound of this? Wendy's 4-for-4 now comes with a choice of a junior bacon cheeseburger or a crispy chicken BLT.
From Detroit to Macon, I keep it crisp like bacon.
Both are topped with crispy applewood smoked bacon and come with 4 nuggets, fries, and a Coke for just $4.
Oh, yeah.